This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Scott Watley and we appreciate you being with us. Well, it is the legal hour with our good friend Kevin Flesh. FleshLawFirm.com is Kevin's website, and that's FLESCHLawFirm.com. And if you've got any kind of legal questions, that's what we do here for this hour. We will help you in any way we can. So our phone number is 303-477-5600. And again, if you've got any kind of legal question for Kevin, we will take your call today. And with that, we will welcome Mr. Flesh. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
You know, we've been getting one of these storms over the last few weeks. And boy, one time on I-25 way south, there was a 30 or 40 something car collision. I mean, you get in that accident alert.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that a minute.
Sure.
And just let people know, you know, we always talk about getting out, you know, getting witnesses, taking pictures.
Yeah.
But when it's a driving snowstorm under accident alert, you can't call the cops really unless somebody's injured, right?
Yep. Injured or drugs or alcohol.
Okay.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, that's correct. So, well, we still go back to the same things that we talk about, the things that when you can't call the police, then it's on you, right? You want to make sure that you do even as long as you're not hurt. And then if you are, the police are going to show up. But if you feel pretty good, the adrenaline is still going, you think that you can probably get to the doctor yourself. Before you leave that accident scene, you want to get a picture of the person that was driving. You want to get a picture of their vehicle identification number on their vehicle. So you go to the right by where, you know, the steering wheel is. There's the VIN that's in the car generally. You want to get a picture of the license plate so that you can track down if, for example, the person gives you insurance and it's just not accurate, you can maybe track them down through a license plate or through the vehicle identification number on the car. And then you want to get copies of or take a picture of their proof of insurance so that you can make a claim, especially if they're at fault. So and then if there's anyone else that stops, like yesterday, I was driving up to Longmont. Northbound was fine. We were going along 35, 40 miles an hour. Southbound was stopped because there was a jackknife semi and another car, and it was just a mess. If people stop to help you, you want to get their names, full names, and phone numbers and address. And because sometimes they have information where the other party is not being honest about what happens, and it's just your word against them, it makes it more difficult to prove liability later on down the road. But if you've got a third party that was there that says, oh, no, I saw the whole thing, you know, the other driver was being stupid, driving too fast, weaving in and out of cars, like I saw yesterday. And
it is amazing. And usually, I'll admit, I'm a truck driver. When I say truck driver, you know, Silverado, pickup, four-wheel drive SUV. Man, folks, you got to realize, when it's ice, you can have all the four-wheel drives you want.
No doubt.
You can't be doing 50, 60 miles an hour.
So the last couple of storms, it seems like they've been happening during rush hour or during times that I've been driving. And it's been interesting because, the roads have been really slick. And I've just been doing this periodically, and I do it sort of as a matter of course anyway. Because if I see the pavement looks like it's icy, I kind of test it a little bit. All of our vehicles have ABS brakes now that are really good. And if you hit the brake hard and your ABS goes on instantly, you know you're on ice. Mm-hmm. And my vehicle tracks really well going, it'll go straight when the ABS is on. As long as I keep the wheel straight, then I'm good for a while, right? But when you can go a couple of seconds and that ABS is just thumping away and you're still going straight and you know that you're just on ice, slow down.
Yeah, no
I mean, kidding. that's what I found. So then yesterday again, I was giving lots of room to people because I was like, these are bad conditions. We're going slower, but still, you know, give double the amount of space. And if people move into that space, well, keep giving them space, because there are so many times where we get these multi-car wrecks that people are just too close. And so the lead car has that problem, slams on their brakes, and the person behind him is too close, following too closely, rear end. We've talked about the presumption of negligence when you rear end somebody. It's just a matter of law. And you end up in this accident that you really didn't want to have. And yesterday, I even went off onto the side at one point because I wasn't sure. Yeah. you know, we were driving along and I slowed down and the person in front of me slowed down pretty fast. And I thought I would stop, but I just moved over into, because the snow was actually better than the road, because I went off onto the side where it was just 4 or 5 inches of snow to slow down. I slowed down and the person that was behind me came up right next to me because they didn't stop. So, I mean, it's that sort of stuff, being aware, both right. front and back.
And you've got to remember as well, and unfortunately, I mean, this has been several years ago, but we had a church that was friends of our church that guys were coming down I-70 back from Oklahoma City, and one guy was even a sheriff up north that was driving a van.
Yes.
And they spun out, and a gentleman got killed in one of the vans. But here was this deputy sheriff driving, doing about 20, 25, and he still got a ticket for careless yeah. driving. So you don't have to be whipping out of traffic to get that.
No, you don't.
The conditions, you better, I mean, you rarely see people get into accidents that aren't going very, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you got to keep your speed down.
Yeah, I actually had the question this morning from a client. He said, all right, so yesterday I would have been driving down I-25 and tried to slow down in traffic and it wasn't going to happen. And I slid into the median. And I said, well, anybody caused you to do that? And he's like, no, it was just traffic. I said, well, you were going too fast if that were to happen, because you've lost control, and that there's a charge for that. And it's the same concept in negligence terms about what a reasonable person would do in that circumstance, and the reasonable person would slow down.
Right.
And if you do that and you still have the issue, then we have to look at what else was going on in traffic. But generally speaking, yesterday in particular and last week when we had that real icy, mm-hmm. wet snow that just caused a bunch of problems, same thing. It's just, we don't have that experience all the time. It happens maybe 5 or 6 times a year, it seems like. We've just got to really slow down and deal right. with it. And sometimes we forget that.
Absolutely. Again, this is the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. If you've got any questions for Kevin, give us a call, 303-477-5600. Something I wanted to bring up as well, Kevin. This happened a few weeks ago to a friend of ours actually here at the station, where they went to a place over in Grand Lake and rented out snowmobiles for the day, which a lot of people go and do. And when you do that, generally people have you sign some type of release. And most of us do not read that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We're with friends and family. We're just ready to go get on it. And we just figure, hey, nothing bad's going to happen. So we don't even look at it. Well, in this case, she did have an accident, did mess up the machine. And some, you know, $5,000 later, now they want that. And
right.
we called you to see what was going on.
Yeah.
So just educate us a little bit on, you know, releases. I mean, that word means what it says, right?
It does. And specifically, there's a statute in Colorado. They're called exculpatory releases. And the releases, generally, you see, especially in the summer months, we've got releases relating to horseback riding, relating to whitewater rafting. The Skier Act as well comes up with people buying lift tickets and giving up some certain rights relating to their ability to sue the ski resorts for many things that are causing injuries on the ski slopes. But snowmobiles, same thing. So you go to these places, and let's face it, you see it on the other place that I've had the same sort of release is those bouncy places that have the right. the trampolines.
Right.
Anywhere where the activity is dangerous enough that it's a situation where the likelihood of injury or some sort of property damage can happen quite often, the only way that those places stay in business is by having you sign these releases, really. Mm-hmm. Because either if they don't have those releases, either the insurance would be astronomical, and for a horseback ride, you'd have to spend $1,000, and it just isn't possible for most people to do that. So economically and legislatively, they've put essentially the opportunity for you to waive your rights to having any possible defense or the ability to sue them in the event that you were injured. And so you guys sent me that release, and the release was pretty clear about the fact that when you sign it, first of all, you were signing away all of any liability, because she was the one driving the snowmobile, mm-hmm. and she warranted that first of all, she had the ability to drive it and that she physically was able to do it. And then secondarily, she waived any liability. for any injuries that she may cause because of her driving the snowmobile. The second thing that she did, though, is she also admitted that she would take care of any damage to the snowmobile in the event that she did anything to it. And unfortunately, in this case, that happened. And when that happens, some places will give you the opportunity to buy insurance for it. Some won't. In this particular case, they didn't have that opportunity. And without checking with your homeowner's coverage or your rental, you know, your renter's insurance, or having an add-on for these sorts of things, you're kind of on the hook in the event that you do something. And, you know, I had the same thing happen to me 20 years ago when I rented a snowmobile and rolled it off of the side of a mountain up in Wyoming and ended up buying a fairing and some other things from it. So I learned the same lesson. Right. And the issue with that is really when you're there is, are you willing to take that risk, or are you willing to say, no, I'm not willing to take that risk and I'm not doing this activity?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to
say. So it should kind of be, hey, that few-minute wake-up call. Hey, if they're asking you to sign a release, what you're doing
could
be a problem.
Especially, I mean, snowmobiling is a little bit unusual because normally you're not off-trail too much, and you're sometimes it's guided, or they give you a map so they know where things are pretty safe and that sort of thing. But the ones that are really scare me is the whitewater rafting. I mean, you know, I've got a boat. I do a fair amount of whitewater activities, but for everybody that goes up there for the day to Buena Vista and you know, any of the rafting companies that are there to go through Bronx Canyon, I mean, you just don't know. I mean, it's a very dynamic situation, and when you make that decision to do that, you're essentially saying to them by signing those releases, I'm giving up any rights that I have to make a claim against you, because that's just the nature of the activity. Very similar in the case of skiing. I mean, it's got to be, there's very few exceptions to that relating to the fact that you can go after a ski resort for something that maybe they've caused. But, you know, you run into a tree and that's not a man-made thing. So, but any of those sorts of things, the same thing with these trampolines. I've had cases where thought I had a really good case in the sense of I had a girl that was really hurt by what happened within one of those facilities. We did our due diligence. We got the release that her mom had signed because she was under the age of 18. And it turned out that she waived any rights that they had in going after this facility. And so you really do need to think about what you're doing and whether or not you want to take that risk when you run into those. Because they're, for the most part, they're almost ironclad as well, because the legislature has said, we understand that some of these activities are going on, especially in the case of the ski resorts. Mm-hmm. There's so much of our economy that's geared towards that sort of activity and for people coming into the state.
Right.
That the legislature has made that decision that you have the ability to ask somebody to give you that release, and if they're willing to give you that release, then they really have given up a substantial amount of their rights.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you see on the back of tickets to entry to places, you know, sporting events, they'll talk about
baseball. That.
So same thing.
I
mean, it's really, it really means it.
It really does. And the reason it really does is because it's been codified by the legislature, that they've entered into and passed laws that allow for that. So the sort of thing that happens with a baseball ticket is the back of the ticket with the little bitty words on it means something. They're putting you on notice. And same thing when you go into the baseball stadiums, there's generally signs there that say the same thing, that those are the notices that they give you, that you're taking a risk by sitting on the left or right-hand sides of the field where foul balls go.
Sure.
And if you get hit, then they're not responsible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Once again, it's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. If you've got a legal question, we can try to stump the lawyer today, all right? 303-477-5600. We'll take a short break and be back with more right after this.
2019 is here, and rates are still in the low fours. Denver's housing market is continuing to increase in value, with over 35,000 more families moving in than out annually. The feds continue to raise short-term rates, like auto loans, credit cards, but many of our clients are paying off their credit cards before rates increase again. Others are doing much-needed home improvements, like new carpet, kitchens, finishing basements, etc., and then some are just putting money away for that rainy day. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Have you heard? There are loans specifically available for those self-employed. or those without W-2s. You now have options. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Your locally owned and trusted mortgage broker since 2001, where we specialize in you, the customer. 720-895-0500. That's 720-895-0500. Affordable interest mortgage. And MLS 298191, regulated by DORA, equal credit lender.
You've been told nothing can be done for your peripheral neuropathy. Don't give up hope. Call Dr. Dean Anderson, chiropractor at Front Range Medical Center, to ask about electronic signaling. For the past 9 years, Dr. Anderson has specialized exclusively in the treatment of peripheral neuropathy. Front Range Medical Center can't help everyone, but thanks to an advanced technology called electronic signaling, Dr. Anderson has seen great results for seniors who'd been told there was no hope for them. That's what Dr. Anderson loves most about his job, seeing the hope return to patients who had been suffering with burning, tingling, and numbness. It's worth a phone call. Schedule a $27 consultation with Dr. Anderson, including a neuropathy-specific exam, this week. He will review your health history and past medical records to find out whether electronic signaling could help where other treatments have failed. Don't lose heart. Call now, 720-851-9694, 720-851-9694.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
David R. Cishon is a certified estate planner, regional vice president of Householder Group, and a registered representative with LPL Financial. David Cishon knows that building a secure financial plan begins with comprehensive strategies in estate planning, income distribution, tax and investment planning, and risk management. Cishon Financial is a family business, and they treat their clients like family. Cishon Financial holds to the highest fiduciary standards, representing their clients' interest above all else. Call now for your free consultation, 720-482-1917, 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Legal Hour here on Haystack Help Radio. And once again, if you're just getting in the car or turning on the radio, Kevin Flesh is our guest. And if you've got any legal questions, our number is 303-477-5600. Kevin, we were talking about a few different things a couple weeks ago, and we'll just kind of hit a few legal topics here. And you brought up a term that I had never wasn't really familiar with, called negligent entrustment.
Yes.
So wanted you to enlighten us on that.
Yes. So negligent entrustment comes into play a couple of different. We see it a lot in car accident cases. So the idea is that you're suing someone who's given, in most cases, has given the opportunity for another person to drive a car. And that person that has gotten permission to drive the car has then caused injury to someone. And a lot of times what we're trying to do is that there are normally cases where the injuries are substantial, and so we're chasing insurance policies a little bit, or The person that was driving the vehicle had no insurance, and we're trying to get to the insurance for the owner of the vehicle that allowed the person to drive it. And so the idea with negligent entrustment is you first have to prove that the person that allowed the other person to drive the vehicle knew that that person wasn't a very good driver, or that they had a propensity to speed or not follow traffic laws, or just the fact that in any way that we can to show that they would be negligent themselves. So the idea is, I'm trying to give a good example of another situation where you would have this. So I suppose, you get into a situation where you give somebody something that you know is dangerous, maybe a weapon. Okay. You were to give, a three-year-old your gun and they shoot another person. Completely by accident, but the three-year-old has no training in weapons,
right,
and has no ability to understand what they're doing. That would be a situation where you as a parent would be sued for negligent entrustment of that weapon, because it's a dangerous thing, just like mm-hmm. a car is, and you know that the child isn't capable of recognizing the danger they could cause. And it's the same thing with a car. So the idea is that where you normally see this is kids that are under 18. So when somebody gets their minor driver's license, a parent or someone else has to sign an affidavit saying that they're capable of driving safely.
Right.
And generally speaking, that same person is the one that gives them a car or allows them to drive their car. So that's where we get this sort of phenomenon that happens relating to the negligent entrustment. So the negligent part's pretty straightforward, although factually, sometimes it's hard to prove. I've got a case right now where we have a person that's now over the age of 18, but at the time they were under 18 driving their parents' car, and just before this accident happened, they had got charged with speeding like 100 miles an hour in a 65. Okay. So the parents had to have known prior to giving this child their car again that they had the propensity, at least the allegation of the propensity to speed. And so we're making the argument that they knew that they were dangerous, and then the accident that we had that we're involved with, the person, he was speeding. And so we're trying to make that leap that the parents were negligent. And if they are, then we get to their policies and all of their assets as well as under this theory of liability.
Okay.
So that's a long story for a The thing that's important is for parents to recognize when they have a child that's out of control driving, that they need to control that child, and if they don't, they may be responsible for their actions.
Right.
Yeah.
The other day I was talking with someone that was kind of works more in the senior field, and we were talking about this. What if you have, a parent, and they're in their, it doesn't matter what age, 70s, 80s, 90s, they've still got a driver's license, yep, so to speak. You know, they don't even know, they can't remember what day it is, all that.
Right.
But yet, you as a family member are still allowing them to drive their own car or whatever. Could anything ever come back if, they got into an accident and, killed somebody or whatever, and then, their attorney said, hey, did anybody in their family know they shouldn't have been driving? And you had to go, yep.
Yeah, so
could anything ever come back like that?
It depends on what vehicle they're driving and what their condition was. Certainly, in the event that a family member allows that person to use their vehicle, same thing like a teenage driver, you'd have that same issue, because we still have the ability to raise this claim of negligent entrustment where it's two adults. I've had that case too, where a friend lets another friend use the vehicle, and they had just been to a house party, and the other person had been drinking, and they knew that they had been drinking, and our allegation was you shouldn't have allowed them to use your vehicle knowing they were impaired by something. So it's the same sort of thing. We also get into sort of social host issues relating to that as to who gave them the alcohol before mm-hmm. putting them in the car. But relating to your specific question as to what can happen with the family, unless the car or something that causes the injuries are related to the family member and they're still alive, then there's really nothing that a person could. But it's an inquiry that we always look into, especially where you have, if the first policy is going to be enough to resolve the case and make someone whole, the likelihood of using this sort of theory is pretty minimal. But in the event that you have a more significant injury, then you've got the ability to raise that as well.
Okay.
And it is interesting because there are so many people. I just finished a case in the criminal context, where the couple, it was a domestic violence case, but the couple is in their mid to late 80s, and they have a caregiver that was at the house, and the caregiver said that the husband physically assaulted the wife and called the police. And it was one of those situations where they're both on the verge of having dementia and not really being able to care for themselves anyway. And it's, what is the role of the family in that situation? We got into a criminal case, and we had to separate them, get the two individuals into two households while the case was pending. But eventually we got the case dismissed, and the court recognized that there wasn't much that the court could do, even though it had jurisdiction, because the family was taking care of it once they found out that these things were going on and it was a real issue. So sometimes if there's competency issues, the court has jurisdiction to get involved, or if there's been a significant injury that's related to it, you know, then you've got probate issues where people are deemed incompetent or not. But if the person's competent, they just really shouldn't be driving because they're failing in their faculties. You know, that's an issue that the family needs to take up and try to reason with the person. But if the person's not going to listen to a son or a daughter or whatever, then it's kind of on them if they cause any injuries. And then fortunately, the victim of those sorts of situations don't have a lot of ability to go after anything else other than the person that caused it.
You know, it's been the news lately. They're looking at legalizing this whole mushroom.
Yeah.
Thing, hallucinogenic mushroom.
Right.
And I wanted to ask you, just as this whole marijuana thing has come on the scene here in our state, and of course, DUIs have already been where they are. Are you seeing, you can put a percentage on it or what, or just say, hey, yeah, you've seen a big increase with the drug part of the whole deal with driving and DUI?
So this is what's happened over time relating to the police officers, first of all, are getting better trained. And so there's more what are called drug recognition experts that are on the street as patrol officers. They have to go through additional training to be that. Normally, officers would go through DUI training so that they could recognize the indicia of alcohol previously. But because marijuana has become such a big deal, officers now, many of them, especially the officers that are on later shifts in the evening, there's always generally in each police force a officer on duty that's a drug recognition expert. And only because those officers are trained to recognize more indicia relating to use of marijuana or related to use of other sorts of substances other than alcohol. And it's important for them to be available so that they can determine whether somebody's impaired or not. We have seen a significant increase in officers requesting blood tests to determine THC levels in people's bloodstream. And it's become a very much cottage industry for a number of experts in the state on both sides of the argument as to what is impaired when it comes to THC levels. Because the legislature, there's no real good study out there. There's a study from D.C. Within the last few years that is closer, I think, to what the reality is. But because we're one of the few states that have made it legal recreationally, there really needs to be studies done. Because what happens is THC stays in your fatty cells of your body, and your THC levels in your bloodstream can be relatively high, and you're not actually impaired. You're not high.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and the standard to begin with, the legislature thought it was 5 nanograms. Of THC in your bloodstream, but I think it's universally believed at this point that someone that's a chronic smoker, maybe daily or every couple of days, their THC level may be 15 or 20 when they haven't smoked since the day before, which theoretically, at least under the legislature's belief, it would be 3 times sort of that presumptive limit. That's not a presumptive limit yet, but that the district attorney's offices were trying to suggest to jurors was the legal limit. And so that's what we're fighting about right now. And I think it'll shake out over time, but there's just going to have to be more study done to figure out what that level is.
Sure. And, you know, I think we would all agree that no matter really what happens with all this, it's not marijuana and all the things aren't going anywhere. There's so much money in it.
Yeah.
All these.
So much money.
I mean, tons.
It's unbelievable. And in fact, I just finished a case where, there was news last week that the owners of Sweetleaf, one of the larger marijuana recreational and medical providers got charged and were finally sentenced last week. The two principals of Sweetleaf are going to prison for a year. And the reason that they are is because they sort of implemented something within their corporation where they didn't really check if a person would come in. You know, you're only supposed to buy an ounce a day. Well, they had what are called loopers. So somehow word got out that Sweetleaf would allow you to buy as many ounces as you wanted.
So you make your buy and you loop around the block and come back.
That's exactly right. I just finished a case where a guy, my client was from New Mexico. He had come up for a weekend and bought 42 ounces in 2 days.
Wow.
So he had come through and, you know, 20 times the first day and 20 times the second day, and they had no trouble selling him an ounce a piece. And he was, you know, the question was, what was he doing with it and why would they allow him to do it? And so he had to, there was a complex mess that he got himself into. And so they, I mean, you know, there were two normal, regular corporate guys that went to prison this last week because of what they were doing, because it was against the law. And it makes sense that it's against the law.
Yeah.
And so even though it's legal, there's certain things that people still can't do in the way of the amount of marijuana that they can have in their possession. So there's still a lot of that being litigated and trying to figure out, because there's a ton of money, both privately, the individuals who are selling, but also the state is getting a ton of tax money from it too.
Right. It's Legal Hour with Kevin Flesh. Kevin's number, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886. His website is fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit about parents' liability for their children's actions, civil parental liability, criminal parental liability. And again, if you've got any legal question, Kevin will take your call, 303-477-5600. We'll be right back.
Why are seniors considering a reverse mortgage other than no mortgage payments? Hi, Steve Hurley here with Affordable Interest Mortgage at 720-895-0500. Other than no mortgage payments, another reason may be the access to equity that they did not previously have. Taking in monthly payments for life or a specified period of time, or simply having a line of credit available. Take aim at 720-895-0500. And ask for me, Steve Hurley, NMLS number 243200, regulated by DORA, an equal opportunity lender.
Hi, I'm Lindsay. A few months ago, I was in an accident. I totaled my car. They were just going too fast, and it was icy right there. It was his fault, but it wasn't anyone's fault. That's why it's called an accident, right? I was so sore. Not at first, but like days later. I had to go to the hospital. I have always heard about the things insurance companies do when this kind of thing happens, but didn't know how bad it really was. I needed an attorney. I called Flesh and Beck, and man, I'm glad I did. From the first call all the way to the settlement, Kevin was there for me. It was like having my own personal attorney. He really got to know me, and he knew everything about my case. There is no way I would have gotten that big of a settlement if I hadn't called. I definitely recommend calling Flesh and Beck if you've been in an accident. Definitely.
Hi, I'm Kevin Flesh from Flesh and Beck Law. At Flesh and Beck, you get real, sincere, personal service from attorneys that actually care about you and your case. Call us, Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. 303-806-8886.
Did you know that Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center has a beautiful, unique cat lodge, and their feline guests are loving it? The cat lodge is a special place where cats can lounge all day in the comfort of their own private space or climb to their favorite resting spot on their custom-built cat trees. If your special friend likes to lounge and watch things from afar, the cat lodge has many cozy places, all in view of their colorful and mesmerizing aquarium designed to entertain and delight their feline guest. Whatever your cat's fancy, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center created their cat lodge with your pet's comfort in mind. And all the while, your cat will be under the experienced care of their lodge pet care specialist. They would love to have your cat as their special guest the next time you're away, so don't hesitate to ask about making your cat's reservation in their cat lodge today. Hey, we've trusted our pets to Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center for over 15 years, and you can too. Call 303-708-8050. That's 303-708-8050, or visit lonetreevet.com.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio, a special edition here of the Legal Hour with our good friend Kevin Flesch. Once again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. I always recommend you put that in your phone in case you ever need it. We hope you don't, but if you do, you've got it right there at your fingertips. And today, you just never know when you might need legal help. And Kevin, we haven't done this in a while. Why don't you kind of give us just a brief overview of Flesch & Beck Law?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a litigation firm. We've got offices, really three offices now, one in Westminster. Our main office is in Englewood that we always talk about, but we've got one in Englewood that most people come to, but we also meet folks in Denver, downtown Denver, and also Westminster on the north side of town. Lori Beck, my partner, has been with us about 12 years, maybe 13 years now. She used to be a prosecutor with Adams County prior to that and wanted to get into prosecuting civil cases, personal injury cases, and that sort of thing. And so we do a lot of that sort of work, and we talk a lot about civil liabilities and other personal injury sorts of things on this show. But we also do a ton of criminal defense work as well, both in municipal courts, in the state courts, and federal court. Everything from, you know, your run-of-the-mill shoplifting case in Glendale to, you know, murder cases in Arapahoe County. I mean, we really run the gamut in all the different types of criminal defense work that we do. We handle a ton of DUI and DUID work and domestic violence sorts of allegations, drug possession, and all of those sorts of things that, unfortunately, good people run into and make mistakes and get charged for along the way in their lives sometimes. So, and we primarily work in the metro area, but I've got cases. I just finished a case, a DUI trial that I did up in Glenwood Springs a couple of weeks ago, won that case. And it's always fun to go up in the mountains and see how there's definitely a difference between folks that are in the big city versus rural towns. And I like trying cases in both places because I think it makes me a better trial lawyer. And we do. We try a lot of cases. Had a court trial yesterday, you know, and so we're in court a lot. It was in court this morning. We're supposed to have a jury trial, but they didn't have a witness show up, so we were able to get the case dismissed. So always pushing the prosecution and making sure that everything is fair for our clients in the criminal defense arena, which is really what you want to have happen.
Sure. And, you know, that's really a huge advantage, I think, over, you know, a lot of attorneys because, hey, I mean, there's some out there that we know that, I mean, they have no desire to take something to a trial.
Yeah.
They just want to try to settle it as quick as they can.
Especially on the civil side.
Get you a little bit of money,
yep,
whatever. And so when I say it's a benefit to us, I mean, for you to walk into court and, you know where you're going, know who to talk to, makes a big difference in walking in and going, where do I go for this? Yeah. And you're my attorney. That would not give me a good comforting feeling.
Yeah. You know, and I've been in the market since 1996. I started practicing law then. You know, you don't really think about it, but it's 22, 23 years now. I was in Jefferson County this week, and there's a judge there that's been on the bench only a year or two, and he used to be an associate of mine. And so it was the first time that I'd actually appeared in front of him, and so he had to disclose to the district attorney and the other folks in the courtroom that I used to be his boss, and I felt really old. You know, it was one of those deals where they're like, oh, you know, that's pretty funny. But that's the sort of experience that we have. You know, when you're in court and you're doing the battles that we are and you're able to see the different judges and you're able to interact with them on the criminal side, it really helps our civil practice as well. Because the civil side of the practice, quite frankly, you don't get to try as many cases because generally speaking, we settle a lot of cases because either the case is economically, it's too expensive to try, or the risks are too high by the time we get the offers that we do. And then the other thing is we just get better offers because they know the insurance companies and the adjusters and the attorneys that we deal with on a regular basis know that if they aren't fair in the sense of assessing risk and what the possibilities are with a jury trial, that we'll go to trial. And that just ends up over time, we're good advocates and we're decent to deal with the other side. We provide the things we need to provide so that they can do their work to determine what the value of the case is.
So, I mean, you build a reputation there just like a judge does or
absolutely
a DA does.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And when you're in the marketplace as long as we are, it's one of those situations where you do get to know people and you get a reputation for, I think our reputation is number one, that we provide everything that we're supposed to provide. We don't hide the ball, and then we're willing to put on a good case if we need to. And that means much like we hear sort of power through strength or resolution of matters because they know that you'll do what you need to do. It's the same thing. And we get matters resolved sometimes where I don't think they will. I think right. We'll have to try them. But eventually we get what we need to get closer to trial just because we're getting it prepped and we're getting it ready to go. They know we're serious.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's fun. And it's the firm continues to grow. We do things like this. We obviously advertise as well, but we still want to keep a good conversation with our clients, making sure there's good customer service, that we're aggressive on the trial side, but not too aggressive in the way that we grow the firm so that the client is always remembered. And we continue to get referrals because of that and shows like this. Really sure. Appreciate that.
And you know what we hear, I mean, people are great to get to actually just see you or Lori. I mean, you know, they're not meeting with a lot of different paralegals. Well, they never get to see you.
Yep. And that's the
I mean, there are sometimes those people are involved in a case. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not just never going to get to see you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I have people ask all the time. And we still, the lawyers in the firm still do the intake for the firm. And so the lawyer that you meet in the initial intake is going to be the lawyer that's sitting next to you at the trial. I mean, unless something horrible happens,
sure.
But to the lawyer. but in our case, yeah. So I, you know, when I meet with a client, they say, "Well, are you going to do this? Are you going to actually represent me?" I'm like, "Yeah, that's why I'm meeting with you." I mean, that's the whole point. You get to decide whether you want me to do that. I'm not going to hand you off to someone just because I've brought you in. Our firm is really linear in that way, in the sense that the person you meet with is a person that you're going to continue to have that relationship with. You're not going to be pre-lit and litigation departments and meet a case manager and never meet the lawyer. That's just not how we operate. Because I wouldn't want to be treated that way. That makes me feel like I'm just a number rather than every case is important, especially to the client.
Sure.
And so our firm is dedicated to that.
Right. Okay, before the break, I brought up a term, parental liability. And so I'm going to read something here just real quick and let you comment on it. It says, parental liability is a term used to refer to a parent's obligation to pay for damage caused by negligent, intentional, or criminal acts committed by the parent's child. Now, the parent's liability usually ends when the child reaches the age of majority, it says, and doesn't begin until the child reaches 8 to 10 years old. And today, most states have laws relating to parental liability in various applications. So, how often does this come about in the legal world?
Yeah, it comes up, trying to give you a sense of percentages. You know, they're not a high rate of claims that are brought for this sort of thing. They're certainly out there. And the idea is first of all, an 8 or 10 year old child generally isn't in any sort of court system. The juvenile system deals with children and criminal acts by children, right, if they were adults. The idea is kids under the age of 10 generally don't get into that system because cognitively the court system and our judicial system would suggest that children at an age of 10 or less aren't really competent to make decisions, aren't really able to even testify in court. I mean, to get a 5-year-old child to testify in a court case, you have to have a hearing separate from the trial and separate from a jury that a court has to question the child directly and make the determination as to whether or not they understand what a truth or a lie is, that they understand time and space and where they are and what things are going on, and that they truly can give credible information to a trier of fact. If the court's not satisfied that child can do that, they won't allow them to testify. They will deem them incompetent. And what that incompetent determination means is it doesn't matter what they've said before or during court, they're not able to use that evidence that the child gives a juror to make a decision because they just can't be trusted.
Right.
And so the same idea is held for kids that may cause an injury, like the one that we just talked about where the 3-year-old has the gun because,
right.
I mean, you're going to get charged criminally, most likely, for any sort of death relating to a person that 3-year-old is involved with because of what you did, the negligent entrustment, the way and the manner in which you acted that caused injury to this other person. You know, if you killed that person, it may be manslaughter, but it may be a sense of negligence in the fact that you knew or the outcome of what you did was certain to cause injury. The same is true in these sorts of situations with children. As long as they're over the age of 10, then they have the ability to make some decisions on their own. But then as you as a parent have some responsibility in chaperoning them or making sure that you know what they're doing. Sure. And there's some caps to that liability, depend upon the state. There's some caps in Colorado relating to what you'd be responsible for in the sense of the liability for the child's actions. But it's very fact-specific. And certainly, when we talked about relating to vehicles, if the child has a driver's license and you've again, made that affirmation when you gave the state the ability to give them a driver's license, you're going to be responsible for their actions up until they're 18.
Okay.
And so that's why we've always talked about, well, not always, but whenever we talk about you've got a child that's coming up that's going to have a driver's license, look at your insurance policy and start thinking about the things that they could be doing and making sure you have enough coverage because you may have some significant liabilities because you're affirming when you allow the state to give them that license that you'll be supervising them.
Right.
And that's negligent supervision if you're not, and they cause an injury and you had noticed that they probably were going to do that. Mm-hmm. And again, same vehicle, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a scary having three teenagers myself.
Sorry to say, when you're talking about looking at insurance, you had to do that all in a couple of years, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that you've really got to think about what the child is driving, how they're driving. And I think that's why we see so many times, you know, like Allstate or a couple of other insurance companies, we're putting GPS units on, we're willing to do that on vehicles, or you're able to do other things to see speed and to determine driving habits and those sorts of things. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Sure.
If you have the opportunity to do it and it helps you manage and teach, they're teachable moments for kids. I mean, I know when I was a 16-year-old, I did some really stupid things in a vehicle just because absolutely. You thought it would be fun to see what the vehicle would do.
No.
You know?
That's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Hey, watch this.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Before our break here, to wrap up on this, I was reading this under the criminal parental liability. It says, laws making parents criminal responsible for the delinquent acts of their children followed the civil liability statutes. In 1903, Colorado was the first state to enact a law against contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Now, at least 42 other states in D.C. now have laws against contributing to the delinquency of a minor.
Yes. So so what that means is I've had cases, and this is where you run into it many times, is pretty open-minded parents decide that, hey, I don't want my kids or kid out in a cornfield somewhere drinking alcohol because I think that's really dangerous out in cars. So I'll let them come over to my house and drink at my house. And you have a teenage party at your house, and all of a sudden one of the kids that leaves gets into some trouble. And it turns out they say, well, you're hammered. You're drunk. How did you get the alcohol? And they say, oh, you know, if my friend Bobby's parents gave it to me. Ding, ding, ding. That's how you get to the contributing of the delinquency of the minor. Or I've had other situations where adults, for whatever reason, you know, give them marijuana or the parents are doing things and they think it's okay for the kids. Mm-hmm. Kid's friend is over and things, one thing leads to another and causes problems. I mean, at the end of the day, we have laws in place so that children can't get to these substances and shouldn't be getting to these substances is what the legislature has said. So if you get yourself into a situation where you don't believe that's the case and they're not your kids and you give them those substances and something happens, you're going to get that charge.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, it is what it is.
Sure.
I mean, you know, if you don't believe that that's the way it should be, we always have the ability to go to the legislature and ask them to change it, but no one has. Mm-hmm. And so those are the laws that are in place right now. And I think it makes sense. I mean, I defend people that have gotten themselves into these jams, but at the same time, I can understand why the law is there. I mean, it's the same way we start almost all jury trials in a DUI case. I don't get up there and say, hey, I think DUI laws are bad. They're here. We know why they're here. Now we've got to decide whether or not someone has committed those crimes and hit all the elements related to it and whether the prosecution can prove it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. We got a few minutes left, but we got to take our last break. Again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. We'll be right back.
Ladies, I know you're tired of walking into the local gun store and seeing the same old thing. So let me tell you about Rampart Firearms. Just a quarter mile up Highway 67 off of Santa Fe and Sedalia, you will find a great selection of guns, ammo, tactical, and personal defense weapons. And if you or your spouse love to hunt, Rampart Firearms is a great stop for all of your hunting needs. Shotguns, rifles, pistols, anything from predator hunting to your next big game trip. Head to Rampart Firearms at the foot of the Rockies. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And you will only pay a 4% tax on your purchase. RampartFirearms.com, 720-468-0050. That's 720-468-0050.
Got a road trip planned for getting ready for your next outdoor adventure? Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at D&D Tire Service. At D&D Tire Service in Parker and Aurora, they understand automotive issues can be a headache, and they never come at a convenient time. D&D Tire Service is family-owned and operated and is truly your one-stop shop for all of your automotive needs. All tires are reduced, and for a limited time, there are some great rebates saving you up to $200. From belts to tires, wiper blades, oil changes, D&D Tire Service has you covered. For the location nearest you, call 303-699-7337. That's 303-699-7337. D&D Tire Service is the official auto repair shop of Sportsman of Colorado Radio. Let D&D Tire Service keep you and your family safe on the roads. DndTireservice.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Trisna, owner of M4 Roofing and Gutters. Since 2004, it's been our mission to provide the highest quality of service and trust to every customer we serve. M4 Roofing and Gutters is a family-owned and operated company right here in Englewood, Colorado. At M4 Roofing and Gutters, quality customer service is our top priority. For a free inspection and estimate for your roofing project, call today 303-797-8600. That's 303-797-8600. Or visit us online at m4roofing.com. M4 Roofing and Gutters is an A-plus member of the Better Business Bureau and HaystackHelp.com.
Hi, this is Scott Watley. Let me tell you what I love about Stack Optical. They are truly one of the last optician-owned, family-owned optical stores. At Stack Optical, you can be confident you'll receive personal attention. For over 50 years, Alan Stack has shown he really cares about making his customers happy. Stack Optical also has a beautiful new location at 2233 South Monaco Parkway in Denver. Free and easy, up-close parking. Stack Optical has an on-site eyeglass production lab. Whether you need office eyewear or a new set of shooting or golf glasses, Stack Optical has the solution with the Stack Sport Pack. Give them a call today and ask for their $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. That's 303-321-1578. Your eyes and vision are one of the most important things in life. I'm confident at Stack Optical, you'll see the difference. That's 303-321-1578, stackoptical.com.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesh. A few more minutes left here with Kevin. Once again, I always highly recommend you put Kevin's number in your phone, 303-806-8886. And we hope you never need it, but I'm telling you, there'll be times where something will come up. You may just have a question, and we appreciate Kevin being willing to do that for our listeners. So if you've ever got a question or a problem, and the main thing, Kevin, I always just tell people, you know, hey, it's a free consultation. I just want to touch on that a minute, especially, you know, with personal injury and all the things, and you may not think it's a big deal. It may be a big deal, and, you know, it's just, it costs you nothing but your time for the client to just give you a call and sit down with you.
That's exactly right. And sometimes it does make a huge difference, especially in the case of the DUIs, for example. You know, within 7 days of getting arrested in that particular case, you have to request a hearing with DMV or you lose that ability to make that request and get a temporary driver's license. It's those sorts of things where a lot of times people just don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And there are, as I explained to an associate of mine the other day, there are so many minefields in the practice of law anymore, it's hard for me to keep track of them all. So how can someone who's not trained in this and isn't doing it every day can possibly think that they will know everything about whatever it is? So give us a call. I mean, it's literally, you know, a 15-minute consultation over the phone, and then we figure out whether there is something that we can do for you, right, and then coming in and seeing us, whether it's a civil case or a criminal case. You're going through and you're making a decision about reviewing a contract and, you know, doing something on your house, mm-hmm, or entering into an employment agreement, and you don't understand the non-compete relating to that employment agreement and how it's going to operate. But you're concerned about, well, what if this company, you know, and I don't work out, and 6 months from now I'm leaving it. What does it mean for me? It's those sorts of questions that everybody has. We'll pick up the phone and give us a call, and let's see if we can help you. If we can't, that's fine. You've just wasted a little bit of your time. But otherwise, if we can and we can do something for you, then it's worth exploring.
Absolutely.
And that's how we get clients, and that's how we help people. Because if we can't add value, then there's no reason. We just finished a case of another listener that had an offer on the table before we started the case. Okay. And we filed suit. We went through the process of litigating it. We got them a little bit more money. And then we took the percentage above what they had offered on the table. They were appreciative of it. They walked away with more money than they had to begin with. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they really liked the process of litigation. Right. I don't know if they would do that again. But at least they did get more out of it in the way of money than they would have otherwise. Sure. And that's what we really help people with.
And I think this is a pretty safe statement, and I know you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I always tell people, I think you're pretty much assured you're going to end up with more. And a lot of, you know, hey, your fee is what it is. I mean, hey,
right,
you've done a lot to get to where you are today. There's a lot of expenses there. You got a firm. You got people to pay. So, I mean, it's very, very fair. And I would rather have, hey, that extra bit, instead of saying, oh, I got to keep all of it.
Right.
But could you have made another $50,000?
Well, that's just it. That's really the point in when we have these discussions with people. Because sometimes it's not. Sometimes just economically, it's a $5,000 case, and it doesn't matter what we do. It's going to be a $5,000 case, and we shouldn't take our fee on it. So, but those are the sorts of conversations I have with people, especially where people aren't real aggressive in the manner in which they're talking about what the value is, because a lot of people don't understand how to value, mm-hmm, personal injury cases. And so when they have an offer on the table and they think, ooh, that sounds like a lot of money, but in reality they don't know the full spectrum of their injuries, right, that's where we help, and that's where we add value.
Sure. Flesh and Beck Law, fleshlawfirm.com, FLESCH lawfirm.com. Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. Kevin, as always, good information.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us today for Haystack Help Radio and the Legal Hour. Check out our website, haystackhelp.com, and our helpline is always there for you, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Don't go anywhere. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
Opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.